Oh, you're still here?
Okay, well, here's episode 3,
Return of the Journey.
We've been running for an hour and a half, so maybe we should put our foot down here because people are going to want to hear something about the honey jar here. We should maybe delve into that a bit. What do you reckon?
I reckon people have questions about the bearer union as well, but...
Oh, the janitor union?
The janitor is an anonymous bearer whale. Being the single biggest holder of bearer NFTs, they gained a reputation by sweeping the floors of various bearer collections. They are also the founder of the Bearer Janitor Union, a group for the biggest bearer whales, where they get together and, I don't know, jerk each other off or something. Back to the show.
Some of the bears are unionized, I guess. The rich bears, eh? If you want to let us know a little bit about that.
Yeah, the fuckers. I'm a data bear. My background's in data analytics. So the dashboard which Kofi has just made, which is looking into OTC and secondary sales of the bong bears and all their rebases. And what this shows, and this is something that I could see a while back, but I couldn't be fucked to build the dashboard, is that the trading activity of the bears is very high. To put this into context, it's in the top 10% of all NFT collections globally. To put that into context, there's been less than 1,000 holders of bears and probably under 50 daily active users. That's in the context of zero marketing from either Bearer Chain or Bong Bears. And so the janitor union was me asking the question of what would be involved in Bong Bears moving from the fairly niche but vocal sector or CT that we exist in through to blue chip. Now, would that be a good thing, a bad thing? That's open for debate. But one of the features of when you jump that next level is that you have entities which are rich, essentially. Now, that's probably bad for culture. I think there are examples of communities kind of having a counter power to this thing. However, I don't think it's a entirely negative thing, because when you have folks like Bidgets or the Frog in a Car or Cryptkeeper or the Bagel or Bearerman69 or Jenny come through, they come through with liquidity, which gives more options to existing communities kind of come in and out. And so it's a dynamic tension. And the janitor union, what happens in there, if I, the Jani Ewok, were to release the internal secrets of what was happening in there, there would probably be just... Have you seen that documentary, Star Wars, with the Ewok village and all of that kind of, like, grand battle? We'd probably see some, like, major war going down, because some of the shit that's happening in there is awful. In all honesty, it's like empire building. It's like, if the community are the Ewoks, it would be kind of civil war, kind of pickets of defense and this type of thing. But it's all part of the kind of organic growth of, if this collection that we all care about for different reasons is to move beyond top 10% to, say, top 5%, congregating some of these big actors and saying, yo, here's this interesting platform, should we put some liquidity on it? There might be folks who have a lot of bears and a lot of ETH, but might not have headspace or capacity to kind of figure out what this latest platform is. And it's a space where essentially we can talk together without having a million different DMs as part of it. But yeah, there is, I'll be honest, there's probably like sects within the Jani Union who want total global domination. There's sects within the Jani Union who just want to keep the floors real squeaky clean. Like, even there's a subdivision within Squeaky Clean Crew. There's like a war going on at the moment between those who kind of like bleach, and there's those who are a bit allergic to bleach and they just want to use organic products.
Is this organic?
Like, that's a, I'm not even going to get into that one, because that's, at times it gets kind of like, those people, some of them just need therapy or to go in touch with us, I don't know.
It's not your fault.
I know. No, you don't. It's not your fault.
And then you've also got like sections of the Jani Union where there's like different NFT-fi, so it's NFT times DeFi platforms kind of coming in and just having a channel open to folks who might be liquidity providers on the tools that they're building. What else? Who else is in there? The Jani Union.
Henlo.
Henlo. So yeah, there's a lot of Henlos in there and Ubugas, but at times you're a bit like, oh, that's some of the way some people write Henlo. I'm just like, I don't know about you. I'm not sure, like, was that was that a henlow of war, or was that a henlow of like backstab, or was that like a henlow of, so it's kind of, yeah, you get a bit paranoid in the Gen Union sometimes. And then other times it's there's some funny gifts. But we started it as it was part of around that time of being like observing there's something interesting going in and around the Bong Bear community, this whole cult as a service ticket. Where that came from was the observation that there was a lot of projects who were building in and around bearer chains. I believe some people were saying, how can we tell projects who are building in and around bearer chain that it would be a good idea for them to airdrop to these cult of bear holders without directly telling them? And so I was thinking about that question, and I wrote this about the triangle of autism, and cult as a service is a way for participants in this ecosystem, projects, to connect with this kind of social liquidity, the kind of attention liquidity, as well as the ETH and JPEG liquidity that comes with it. And the Jani Union was set up as a kind of entity which would advocate for that type of thing. And it was a prelude to what has become the honey jar, because there's only so many of those conversations. It will be easier for me to show you what I mean. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
Just let me go. No, for sure. Yeah, no, that definitely answered the question. I appreciate you going in depth on it like that.
No, it's all good. Like, you in the Ewok army, you should don't let down your guards. The Janitor Union, there's elements within that are kind of like world domination, so keep your little flame sticks at the ready. But then there is like, well, on the other hand, when, you know, when Rome comes in and creates a whole new road that's like now smooth and not super bumpy, like those random Ewok roads you lot make, and the weird little journey tree bridge things that you got going on, where it's like sat in the trees opposite each other, kind of shouting ooga booga and this type of thing. You know, you can appreciate both. Like, the straight road's good, but on the one hand, you might get shanked a bit out in the markets, or paper paws might get shook out in the process. So yeah, it's both a force for good and a force for getting shook out. So just, it's the nature of the beast.
You're saying it's the bear chain Illuminati, Jani.
You know, it's the triangle logo is there for a reason.
This is your reminder that Rome wasn't built.
No, it was not.
Yeah, it was a choice of analogy there.
Don't you have to put like a PTSD warning every time you mention Rome?
You got the soundtrack, the Gladiator soundtrack.
There you go. On the one hand, VC is connecting, but I have a theory that mostly it's group therapy, and you're all super bonded because you've got this trauma bond from shit like Rome, and now your buddies for life, because trying to explain that shit to any normie, you know, it's just fucking impossible. So now you're kind of bros for life, because you saw the battlefields, you were there, you hustled the white lists, and you have some scars, and I don't know. You'd go mad otherwise in the isolation of it.
No, 100%. We came out of the fallout of all of that. And on top of that, how do we explain these bears smoking weed to our people outside of, you know, this sector? It's kind of hard. So, I mean, when you have a group of authentic and people you spent 10 hours, a couple of days within the week, over a year and a half, it's just sort of a recipe for all that.
Yeah, it takes the chat GPT factor out as well. You know, people come voice verify, and like, you know, when you're really curious, you come in and ask questions. You want a real person there. You know, different perspectives. You can come in, get a different personality. They can either be trolling you or telling you the truth, but it's for sure a person.
We all have these unique scars of these four prongs all over our skin from all these forks over the last year. It's true. No one else in any other sphere of the world can really understand the pain that those forks have brought us. So there is something unifying in that in VC.
Stab you with forks until you bleed. How about that?
It gets easier over time. I've been rugged so many times in so many different ways. You know, you get used to it. You just gotta, the aim of the game is to don't stop existing. Try not to completely hit the rocks. If you don't, you should be all right, providing you learn from your mistakes at some point. For most of us, it takes 3 to 4 cycles, real talk. Unless you get super fucking lucky and you're disciplined and you've got training in a particular way, which a lot of folks don't, it takes 3 to 4 cycles to do that education of learning how to curb your greed, or how to book profits, or how to all of this other stuff. I don't know a single person who hasn't had to go that way, who's come from not a financial background. And even many who have, whether they're a tech person or whether they're just like an ape, it's the same deal.
You telling me a bear built this chain?
I'm I'm going to segue into the honey jar now. We've got to get there. we've got to talk about it.
Finally.
There's a lot of buzz right now going on about this project that you're working on with, and also F-Dub and Nap are a part of the team. The honey jar, it's going to be an NFT mint. It's got a ton of partners, including us, the Honeycast. I guess should we just start with a real basic overview? How would you describe the honey jar and what the project is?
The honey jar is an NFT mint for a good JPEG that you can buy when it launches. And when you hand over your ETH or your OHM, you will receive a honeycomb JPEG, and that is the extent of our obligation to you. Now, on the other hand, it looks at a different way. Because of the nature of the Bearer Chain ecosystem, buying a honeycomb might indicate that you are an active participant in the Bearer Chain and surrounding ecosystem. And because of the nature of the tokenomics of the mint, so 40% will be for free to existing bears, holders of articles, winners of games on the website, existing bear holders and partners, so people who are whitelisted by partners. So that's where 40% of the distribution is going to. And then the other 60% is just general mint. The assumption that can be made is that if you've got one of the free ones, or if you buy one, you are interested in the Bearer Chain ecosystem. And that's the extent of our obligation to you in that extent. However, by holding a honeycomb and by essentially saying and signifying, hey, I am interested in this Bearer Chain ecosystem, it makes you an easy target for projects who are building in and around Bearer Chain, who might be looking for people to engage with what they're building. And so thinking ahead there, we have contacted about 40 different projects who, as far as we can tell, are pretty legit, and just letting them know that what we're doing, putting us on their radar and essentially offering them whitelist for their community free mints. And not that they were obliged to, but kind of a gift of their own choice we'll be making to people who are holding the honeycomb. We'll be able to offer a whole array of incentives. But that's kind of outside of our domain. Once it hits that point, it's kind of a one-to-one relation between the holder of honeycomb and partners in sense. And yeah, so as part of the tokenomics, there's no kind of insiders, there's no VCs, there's no team allocation, there's no influencers and this type of thing. So the reason we've done that is we believe that there's more people interested in the campfire, the 0-to-1 shit that's going on around Bearer Chain than can afford JPEG, is basically what it comes down to. And I guess we will see how that plays out. Does that answer your question?
A little bit. I guess I'm a little curious to know some of the logistics there, because you do say it will get exposure, and I guess it can through these partnerships and what they can offer. But I do also wonder, because you kind of alluded to this a bit earlier in our conversation, because you do have quite an extensive collection of bears sitting up on your wall, and you said that that might be dwindling due to the honeycomb. So can you divulge, is there some connection to the way that your collection of bears could work on the chain? Or because there is a lot of speculation as to what the utility might be, are you seeing that utility trickling down into these honeycombs? Is that something you were kind of alluding to, or what were you trying to say there?
No, more what I was referring to in part one of this interview was that when Jani started market making bears and engaging in NFT-fi, like Llama Land, like Putty Options, like pseudo pools, I think at some point I had about 20% of some collections, 10% of others, of the rebases. And at a certain point, once more liquidity came into the ecosystem, I didn't buy back into the bears. So essentially the floor rose and I was kind of distributing. So whilst I used to be a much larger whale than I am now, that was more what I was referring to. By the way, the fact that I used to be as significant a holder as what I was, and that in the process of me not having as many bears and the floor prices increased 2x, is a massive boon. Because normally when you have a whale in a ecosystem and their collection goes down by like 50%, that normally results in kind of down-only action or down-selling pressure. And I think that when that happened, I was like, oh, okay, this is further confirmation that there's some shit happening around the bears that kind of a really large holder can unload. Now, a part of that is new large actors enter the scene. And so it's kind of a part of that dynamic. So in terms of the honeycomb, the way that we've built the smart contracts, we wanted to give some love to the OG bears. They're ridden with the OpenSea storefront mechanism, which puts them in the ERC 1155 category, most of NFT DeFi, so Sudo, Swap, Llama Land, Abacus, all of these emergent caviar, all of these kind of cool new things in sector are primarily built for ERC-721s. And so really up till now, other than people buying and selling or swapping bong bears, they've been fairly, you know, haven't had a lot of exercise, let's put it that way. And, you know, some of them, I worry about their blood pressure, you know what I mean?
I wash myself with a rag on a stick.
So we have built a contract which, at the core of Honeycomb, we cannot produce NFTs unless we send one of the Bong Bear Rogies, or one of the 107, into the cave to hibernate. Once the beekeeper has sent the Bong Bear into the cave...
Oh, they've encased him in carbonite. He should be quite well protected. If he survived the freezing process, that is.
That's the point where the honeycomb is, as NFT, is kind of generated. So in this case, there's going to be 16,420. And the bear will only wake up once all 16,420 honeycomb have been distributed out to the community, either through the 40% free claim or the 60% sale. And if that never happens, Glitch Bong Bear will be in that code cave universe hibernating until the end of time, until the Ethereum network goes offline. However, when all of the honeycomb are out in community, or bought or whatever, or free claimed, at some point one of those honeycomb will ferment. And the fermentation process, so technically speaking, there's a Chainlink oracle that upon the condition that all honeycomb have been minted, will turn into mad honeycomb, or special honeycomb, as we call it in the thing. And that is the only smell that will wake up the bong bear, Glitch in this case. So this is why Glitch is sat in the honey jar logo. And whoever is holding the special honeycomb can turn up to the honey jar and they can wake up Glitch, and Glitch will kind of bounce with them forever. So we're going to have some attestations about the code. So some OGs in space, some pretty well-known folks will make the following attestations. They'll say things to the effect of the smart contract is immutable. Once the OG Bong Bear has been supplied to the contract, no one is able to remove it other than the special honeycomb holder. Honeycomb is all produced only upon supply of a bear. As soon as the contract is supplied with some ETH or some OHM, the big JPEG goes to you immediately. There's no pre-mine of honeycomb, things like that. So essentially, we understand that folks can't read smart contracts. Folks can't read full stop, so whatever. But we'd like there to be some kind of simple statements by right curvers in the space that left curvers can go, oh, okay, they have said this, so to the best of my ability, I will just trust that that is the fact. The reason we've done that is we wanted to show the OG Bong Bear some life and give them, you know, their first little bit of utility before the March of the Bears at some point, which has been alluded to.
For sure. And for any listeners, could you maybe tease at who may be reading over some of these things?
Zeus has said that he's checking over the contracts. We've got some big brain llamas in space who I would need to check if he's okay me referencing, but everyone knows this cat. And some folks from different partner protocols, so the caviar folk are looking at it, and some other secret ones who cannot be named. But yeah, so we're essentially getting the contracts peer reviewed by Big Brains, and then adjacent to that we'll be putting the contracts up for code review in various different avenues, venues, with kind of big bug bounties. But the idea here is that if this first generation mint goes well, we will be adding different games and stories into this kind of metagame, as we put it. At a really basic level, you're buying a good JPEG, and by buying a good JPEG that's cheaper than, say, a Bong Bear or a Bit Bear, if you have enough funds to buy one of those bears, they really are very good JPEGs. But if you're not in a position to, then buying a honeycomb would be a very strong signal to all of the partners we're working with and beyond that you are an active participant engaged in the Bearitching ecosystem.
You're listening to the Honeycast.
Here's the deal. The idea for this project struck on the 21st of December, and so far, the way that it has played out is I had the idea. I messaged someone that I had never spoken to before. Do you have mental illness? Do you want to do something? And within a minute, this person responded back, has mental illness? Yes. The next day, I reached out to some front-end people, and within 5 minutes, they had responded, yep, I'm down. Messaged FDub within the first week and some other folk within, you know, some amount of time, they were like, yep, I'm down. And it's been this very unusual experience where every time we need someone or something, it happens very easily and very smoothly. And anyone who's worked in any type of complex project would know that that is fucking weird. And we've yet to have something happen which makes our lives difficult. And so far things have been suspiciously smooth. Like, I think the Bearer development team, FDub, you could speak to this more, but like, we've got something approaching 40 partners, and this project has been going for just around 2 months. That's a testament to some of the magic shit that we were talking about in part one of this interview. The fact that you can send a single message to folks, hello, and furthermore, Ooga Booga, partner, and the response pretty immediately is yes, when, or one bracket, when, and then you get into the details of it. Has that been your experience, FDub? I'd be interested because, you know, you're out there hustling on all of the calls. I'm just like shitposting on Twitter. How's it been your end?
Yeah, I think it's definitely been that, right? You know, it's only been, whatever, 60 odd days. And when you asked me about doing the BD, I'm like, can I do this? I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. And like you said, like things just started falling in its place. I think initially starting those partnerships off was a little bit more intimidating. And like, they're like, what is this exactly? Like, they weren't too sure. But then once we refined things a little bit, it became so much easier. And yeah, and then once we started gaining steam, people were like, yeah, like we want to work with you. And it also just benefits, like the way you formulated the idea as we were going through it, it just makes sense on all parties to get involved. It helps the protocols, helps the community, helps No Bearers. And I think it was really a really dope idea that made the BDing side of it pretty seamless as it kept going.
We're not really selling anything to anyone. Like we're not having to get them to think anything differently. To each group, we're able to say, hey, do you have this problem? Yes, we have this problem. It's like, well, here's a solution to that problem. That's the extent of it. You know you have product market fit when you ask a set of people, hey, do you have this pain? And they're like, yeah, we have that problem. Would you consider this solution as something which would solve that problem that you have? Yes. And then there's a, I don't know what the word is, but like the cumulative threshold effect where, like, once we had 10 partners, I think between 10 and 40 has been super easy. There was a tipping point where we had projects like, you know, Paragon, Cold Called Us, Temple, Cold Called Us. There's a number of really significant teams in the space kind of, I think, recognized some aspect of what we were doing. Either it was the attention that we were creating a buzz, or they were like, hey, actually, that does solve a problem that we know about. And so to what are the problems that people have? Projects need to identify people with whom they can engage without saying who they're going to engage with because of regulatory constraints. And people want to avoid being farm and dumped. So ideally, you want folks who have been in some way, shape or form vetted as being engaged actors in the space. So that's one. Bearers, you know, I don't know what problem we're solving for existing bearers other than they're fucking degenerate and it gives them something new and novel to be degenerate about. Another is Bearer Chain itself. As mentioned in part one, Smokey spent the entire marketing budget on crayons and Play-Doh, and we've kind of saved their ass in the sense of, I'm shitting you, they're doing fine. But like us doing what we're doing off our own back, like independently as a community, again, solve something. We're gold for them. By we, I mean the bears, JPEG holders, everyone who's hustling in and around this thing. We're like a new L1's dream. And again, by we, I mean the people in a 1,000 holder set of the good JPEGs. And then lastly, there's the new or no bearers. There are like all those people who have observed Bearer Chain. They've seen these people fighting the shit out of each other over their own bags. Like, there's some aspect of something that they've seen that's caught their attention. They've pulled the thread, and they're ready to maybe dip a toe in. Then engage with the articles, read them, understand the project, get your head around what's going on so that you don't end up overpaying for this shit. And the reason for this is that is time better spent by people. Because one, learning to read is going to help you in life, fam.
If those kids could read, they'd be very upset.
Like, imagine all of those rooms you're not going to accidentally walk into because you haven't read the sign properly. Imagine all of those nice, like, you don't just have to look at picture books all the time. This is a much more of a contribution to bear society than getting a bear to turn up in voice channel for 12 hours a day singing a song. You know what I mean?
Did you read?
Uh-huh.
Did you read?
Mm-hmm.
Did you read?
Of course I did.
Did you read?
I read it to a friend of mine. Did you read the closing credits of that movie?
Yeah, did you read that book?
Did you read it?
Did you read
it? Did you read it?
Did you read it?
Did you read it?
So learning to read was big up there. Yeah. And then the actual alpha here is the whole thing is just about bear repelling people. That's it.
Got it. Honey jar, bear repelling people as effectively as possible. Doing a 0-1 elevation, I guess, in whitelisting, taking it one step at a time.
Yep.
Just want to say, Jani, thank you so much for coming out, talking to us, sharing some of your Ewok stories, how you came up. I think there's some really good insight here that people are going to chew on and appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just thank you.
Yeah, thanks heaps.
Tez.
Yes.
Sorry for your loss in editing this. Have fun, I guess.
Who needs daylight?
Tez, I think everyone, we can agree the editing is...
M-E-H. Meh.
Yeah, I try my best. Yeah, I'm going to be in my editing cave for a while on this one, but like I said, I might chop this one up, maybe into a trilogy even, the Jani trilogy, a bit like Star Wars.
Star Wars, yeah, the Star Wars.
I like that. I like it.
Perfect. Well, I guess with that being said, guys, we're going to sign off. Definitely check out the Honeycast, Bera_podcast on Twitter. You can check out the Honey Jar, OX Honey Jar on Twitter as well. A mint coming soon. So with that being said, leave a like, a review on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you listen to this.
Cheers.
Cheers, everyone.
Ooga booga.
Booga booga.
Okay, well that's it. That's a wrap. Tez is gonna go catch some sun now. See you on the next one. Bye!